You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Day of June. I don't know if that's anything important. Unless your birthday is on the 26th and it's important to you. Welcome to our house. The tribal command post. Where all things tribal get adjudicated. We could simply extend the reach of our jurisdiction over the nation. Shit would get tight in a hurry. You know, when we held Reveille at 05, got everybody's fat ass out to PT at 05:30. Yeah, trust me, they'd be singing a different tune. Taught them a little bit about respect. That's right. The nation could use a little bit of tribal influence. I'll leave it at that. Yeah, they could. If you haven't watched any part of the shit show that is our national political theater lately, but let me give you an update on father approved bathing suits for the summer. Yeah, I've been working on that. And so I struck a deal with my ex. I said, look, I'll pay for it, but I can't, like, sit around for 2 hours while bathing suits get tried on, okay? It's just, I come on. And so she laughed. She goes, you don't get it, okay? You don't get it. I said, I don't. So I'll pay for them. She said, okay, what's the budget? So we set the budget, and lo and behold, yeah, bingo. My ex-wife and I, we like on there's not a whole lot of daylight on between us on parenting and these kind of the small tribal issues. No, we're in lockstep. So, boom, solved. Even got a couple pairs of shorts. Yeah, all in the budget, or at least in my end of the budget. So, just want to report that success on the bathing suit front for the 14-year-old. That's right. No small deal. Can't have your daughter running around the county, some kind of ridiculous looking swimsuit attire. So that's on the up and up. And then the other thing, I wound up talking to Colleen and I don't know what we're doing. We're driving around. Oh, we're going shopping for the bathing suit. That's right. So we're on our way to shopping for the bathing suit, and the subject of alcohol comes up and her friends. And I've never been a big drinker, but I've always had more fun at a party than most people I know. So, and I tell my kids that you don't need to go get hammered to go have a good time. You know, if when you can drink, and if you so choose, the art of it is getting to, 7,000 feet and having a good time. Relaxing with your friends, having a good time. You don't need to get to 36,000 feet to crash and burn. That's only for the fools among us. So we were talking about that, and some members of our extended family, that are approximately her age, are drinkers. Yeah. Remember, she's 14. So we were talking about that. And I said, and one of the things we talked about was, look at the people that you know in our extended family, okay, both sides of it, and look at the people who struggled, and what's the one thing they have in common? She says, drinking. And I said, yep, that would be it. That's the universal that they have in common. I said, I had to comment on the Marine Corps on my program the last time he was on. And we were talking, and I don't know if I asked him, if you could give young people one piece of advice, what would you give them? I don't know if I asked him that, or I don't exactly remember how it came up. And I should go pull the audio. Because I do stuff like that. But he said, I tell him not to drink. I tell him not to do drugs. It is the most destructive thing relative to people's lives that I've encountered throughout the course of my military career. At the root of most things that have gone wrong for different people will be some kind of substance issue. And I relayed that to Colleen. I said, think about that. All the different lives that get destroyed because people cannot handle, for most people, it's alcohol. Yeah, for most people, alcohol. So it was a pretty interesting little conversation. She said, well, so and so and so and so call me and say, because they know that I don't drink, that, and again, 14 years old, we don't want you to feel left out, but we're going to go drinking. Like, what? Yeah. So, anyway, interesting conversations. And and again, great advice, in my opinion. Great advice. I was talking to the lieutenant last night, He said, yeah, you know, I had friends that they started drinking, and then they started doing pills and stuff like that. One spent a year in jail. The other one's in prison. Now, a lot of people, I'm not going to go reefer madness on everybody this morning, but there's certainly a series of common threads in all of that. And what are the common threads? The common threads are you start drinking and doing drugs, and you're unsupervised at that young, and you're not mature enough, you know, to make good decisions. And then we give you a car and a cell phone that open up all kinds of different worlds to you. And then we think you're going to navigate it. You're a kid. It doesn't work very well without parental supervision. So anyway, so that's the update on the bathing suit front, as well as some other life advice. I'll tell you what we're going to do on the show today. Then I want to comment about our national shit show. We're going to continue. You're going to hear a little bit more from Jeremiah Workman. And so in a week where every time you turn on the TV, something more ridiculous is happening. In a week when you're watching that, to me, a little bit of inspiration is never a bad thing. So you're going to hear more about Charles Krauthammer. And one is a little piece about that he did, I think when his book came out a couple years ago. I think his book's called Things That Matter. I'll be buying that today, by the way. And so Krauthammer, when the book came out, he never, ever, it's actually, there's parts, and I watched a few things yesterday. One of the more amusing parts of it is, so Krauthammer's on Fox for years, okay? And depending on, like, he would be on live with, I think, Brit Hume, Special Report. He would appear via satellite, and I think he had a studio in his home for other, so they have a backdrop, or they use his bookcase, something like that. They install a camera. He wheels himself in front of it. They fine-tune the camera. He does his own makeup, and then he appears on other programs. So he's done this for a while, and he winds up, I think, at the Republican convention in Madison Square Garden in some year ago. Can't remember what. And Sean Hannity walks in, and Hannity tells a story where he sees him in the wheelchair, and he says, "What happened?" Meaning, you obviously got hurt. And Krauthammer looks at him, and he says, the way he relays it, said, I sprained my ankle and I needed a wheelchair. But Hannity didn't know, I'm no fan of Hannity's anyway. He didn't know that, Krauthammer was a paraplegic since he was in his, early 20s. And, you know, Hannity, when you hear Hannity, he's very self-deprecating when he tells the story. He says, I had no idea. I'd only seen him and had him on my program, you know, by camera. He's never there live in studio. And I didn't know. And so Krauthammer, who, and again, that was one of his things. I don't want this to be about me. And then he says something extremely interesting. In fact, it made me think of Prince Musselman, right? He said that, you know, when you argue with other people about politics, don't use the pronoun I. You always have to come at it from their perspective if you want to open up a dialogue and ultimately convince them that they should at least consider your point of view, which is the beginning of a dialogue and the beginning of changing their perspective. So very interesting in terms of the way he approached it, his life, and whatnot. And then you're going to hear from Jeremiah Workman again. And you're going to hear, this is the first part of a kind of a, it's a 2.5 hour interview about, and I broke it up into 3 15-minute segments. You heard a piece of, you heard snips of two of them yesterday. So what you'll hear today is you'll hear the first one, I think it's 11 minutes. So you hear a little bit of Krauthammer, a little bit of Jeremiah Workman, and you will be buoyed. That's right, buoyed. You will be buoyed in your spirit will be buoyed. How about if I say that? All right, Jeremiah Workman, the story that he tells, the way that he tells it, in the detail that he tells it, he didn't have to do that. You know, he did that because, you know, Gunnar called him and said, hey, man, a friend of mine's got this thing called Almarine Radio, and here's what we're doing, and you need to be on, you need to tell your story. And he said, all right. So, and he could have come on and not told the story the way he tells it. And so, I love the interview. What I love is it's more of what I've seen, the courage and selflessness that you see when you go fight as a Marine. You see that on all the time. And Jeremiah Workman, again, the personification of Semper Fidelis in terms of he continues to give through his own pain, through his own journey, and by sharing his story, hoping to help other people. And so you will find fortification in that story when you watch our nation go through this garbage that it goes through, is it discouraging? Is it dismaying? What is it? What actually is it? What is it that we all feel when we look at our national politicians, and they can't, and they can't do the things we elect them to do. And both parties are the problem. The two-party system is the issue. And then you have a media that feeds off it. The environment that's created is one that there cannot be any compromise. If you compromise, you're then the only thing that you're assured of is an opponent in your own party's primary the next time you run. And what? The lubricant of democracy is compromise. So all of a sudden you can't compromise. You can't do the work of the people. So where does that leave us as a country? Screaming at each other? Throwing each other out of restaurants? And let me tell you, the pathetic part of all this is that at some point, another crazy person is going to take a weapon and they're going to do something crazy. But we don't learn, right? We don't learn. I mean, even yesterday, if you watched, you watch Maxine Waters say what she said. You need to get after them. And then when she clarified her remarks, she didn't walk them back. She didn't say, I don't mean do this. She doubled down on it. You saw the Senate majority leader. I'm sorry. You saw the Senate minority leader essentially call her out. Schumer was the only one, in my opinion, that stood up and did the right thing. Nancy Pelosi blamed the president. And I'll tell you what, and he's certainly part of it. He's part of it. The rhetoric and the way he does this thing, you know, you cannot blame people that respond to him in kind. You know, what his defenders will say is that he just fights fire with fire. They do it to him, so he does it back to them. You know, yesterday, what did he call Maxine Waters? Low IQ Maxine Waters? Hello? And so you watch this, And it's pretty dismaying, to say the least. And then, again, you have the conversations with guys like Mike, like, well, what gets us out of this? And the answer is nothing. It's impossible for us to be extracted because the people that have to pass the laws that would extract us will never pass them. So it goes on. The system that gives us these people can't be changed. Fundamental to that reform would be campaign finance reform. Yeah. So, I mean, it's this system that we have. In a victory for the President of the United States, the Supreme Court upholds Trump's travel ban from several mostly Muslim countries. So that is all of the appeals from states like Hawaii, California, all the attorney generals that said he doesn't have the right to do this. The bottom line is he did have the right to do it. So that's just in the President of the United States. And trust me, he's reaching for his cell phone right now, firing up the Twitter account. So the things that you would use to change this, we've been told, yeah, you can't change it. So, again, you can see why that after the next revolution, all elections will be federalized. You can't buy a seat in the democracy. You have to campaign. And since we don't allow anybody to outspend anybody, we force you to come to the table intellectually and present your ideas to the citizens of the republic, right? The election lasts for 4 months. We had a primary. We'll keep the political parties around for that. They'll sponsor primaries. People will vote in those primaries. There'll be budgets for every candidate, right? So, anywho, so then that will leave us with the candidates that qualify out of the primary, then you'll get federal funding. It won't be very much either, okay? It won't be very much because there's only two people that run for national office, right? Everybody else running for state office. You don't need that much money to run for state office because we're not going to give you that much money. And if you violate, if you go into your pocket and you're spending more, your name's deleted from the ballot. So what we want is we want a system where our candidates come before the people, they present their ideas, and they're elected. Relatively short in time, right? Relatively short in time. And every other week they debate. So you get a chance to see them, field questions, right? And then they spend what the other money they have on however they want to spend it. Want to buy radio commercials, TV commercials, they can certainly do that with it. But it's not a billion-dollar industry with consultants and all the rest of this garbage. Okay? The candidates for national office for President of the United States, that's a little bit different. Okay, so they'll get more money. They'll get several million dollars to do it. Okay? But again, it'll be the same. It'll be the same. It'll be a political season. We would have had primaries, and we'll narrow it down, and then the parties can each nominate a candidate, and then all candidates will get the same amount of money. If you can qualify with X percentage of people saying that they're affiliated with your party, and I don't know, we'll set that at what gets you national funding, 10%, 5%, I don't know, what breaks squelch in an election. So I'd have to do some research. Okay, so you'd have, you know, the two major parties, obviously. Would you have people vote would there be a large enough segment of the voting bloc that would identify as independent that you would give money to an independent candidate? I would think so. In that system, you would. And then maybe, you know, the Green Party, whatever they call themselves. If they could get whatever percent, 5 or 10% of the vote, we would allow them on the ticket. And then guess what? When you get those, let's just say we had four candidates. You had the Green candidate, you had the Independent candidate, you had the Democrat and the Republican candidate. Then they all get the same amount of funding. They all appear at the debates. And then we go to the polls. The polls are open for 4 days. from 8 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon. They're open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Boom. Done. On Tuesday, we announce the winner of the election. Yeah. Level the playing field. Now, let me tell you what this does for us. You can go to Washington, D.C. You can compromise. You can do the work of the people because you don't owe anybody anything. The only thing you owe is your service to the nation and go and solve problems. It's a beautiful system, isn't it? I think it is. Yeah, I think political parties, I mean, they've outlived their usefulness. I think they're now a detriment to the democracy. And I would tell you, and I would give you as evidence of that what we're watching today. How can, you know, Mike and I were talking yesterday about catch and release. Catch and release is essentially the law of the land if you come across a border with a minor. Okay. It's a system that where 97% of the people that are caught and released don't show up. So it's the perfect, right? It's the perfect system, right? To legitimately get in the, oh, we just got caught. Put your hands up. Okay. Take us. We're yours. Take us to your leader. And you get a court case like any other American citizen does. What a system. And then we can't detain you because our courts have said that, so we'll release you. Think about it. And the people that sit in Washington, D.C., in the nation's capital, are content with that. Are content with that. Yeah. So it's a sick system. And then that system that won't allow compromise, it's stuck in quicksand, okay? It has a media that feeds off that regurgitation of this nonsense over and over and over and over. It just feeds on it. It just feeds on it. And then the cherry on top of all of it, now, and I don't know to what extent they have any effect, but you have other actors like Russians that are continually taking the worst of this content, throwing it back on social media in an attempt to inflame further what the 24-hour news cycle inflames. So you have compromise, no can do, right? You have the uncivil discourse going on, right? Because our elected political leaders cannot seem to conduct themselves in any other way, to include the president. You have news organizations that are click-driven. They cherry-pick the worst of that stuff, and that's what goes on national TV on a daily basis because that drives ratings, that drives revenue, advertising revenue, that drives profits. So they're maximizing it. And then you have the Russians and anybody else who would want to participate in it going into social media to see the reaction to that content, and then they take that and they blow that up to stoke this fire that will destroy the American democracy, will rip apart the alliances. I have a comment to make about the alliances and this whole trade war. If you watch the news, much is made about the trade war. Well, to me, it's a necessary. You got to do this, okay? Because what the president is contesting is America's underwriting of Western European democracies. That goes back to post-World War, you know, United States. We have underwritten their defense. We have underwritten their economies to a great extent. Okay? He is attempting to rewrite that. He's attempting to level that playing field. And it's not going to come without some pain. So to me, these things are going to happen. And you saw Harley-Davidson announce that they were moving a factory. Trust me. Harley-Davidson just did not decide in the last 2 weeks that they were going to build a factory in Europe, okay? That's not how companies do that, okay? They use this news to announce it, maybe to soften the blow a little bit, okay? Maybe so people will understand a little bit why Harley-Davidson, an American company, is going to open up a manufacturing facility in Europe. But you just don't get pissed as a corporation and say,
we're opening up a factory in Europe next year.
What? Yeah, it's not how that stuff works. So, to me, you have to go through this pain, right, in order to get it right. There's no reason the United States of America ought to have limited access to China when China, we're running a $350 billion trade surplus. There's no reason. No reason at all. Okay? Same thing with Europe. I think the president is on solid footing economically. Now, there might be liberals that say, oh, you know, we're compromising our role as the leader of the free world and all this. What, to get to, look, Germany doesn't pay for its own defense. You do. Okay? World War II's been over for a long time. Years? Yes? World War II been over? So Germany, get the memo, man. So I think that it's important. But, the problem of our nation is substantial. Now, I want to switch gears, and I want to chastise Military Times. Okay, I don't know who the headline writers are, but when your headline writers insinuate that there's a crash, that's wrong. Okay? And anybody who would come on to defend the headline that was at the top of the fold yesterday morning, Marine Corps loses first F-35. Okay? The truth of the story was it had a brake issue and it caught on fire. The Marine Corps, in their cost-benefit analysis of what it would take to repair it, chose to write it off. That's the story. And you see that headline, and you're like, oh, shit, what happened? That's called clickbait. Now, while we expect that from the National Enquirer, we don't expect that from Marine Corps Times. So, little disappointed. The other story that the headline writer wrote, Secretary Mattis, in candid remarks at the Naval War College, quote, if this was vodka, it'd be a much better speech. I play that because I think it's hilarious, right? Candid comments? It was humor after, what, half a dozen attempts to clear his throat during the speech that he couldn't do it. Somebody gives him water. It was humor. It wasn't candor. So I'm not sure who's writing your headlines and your subheadlines, but you ought to bring them in and say, you know what? This is not the National Enquirer. We don't bait and switch on our headlines because it offends people. So, memo to them. Get your shit together. All right. With that said, again, the Supreme Court has upheld the president's travel ban by a margin of 5-4. I'd be interested to read the minority opinion on that. How do you side against, how does that not the right of the president of the United States to say, you know, we want to make sure that people that are coming from these countries that don't have the infrastructure to screen people coming out of their country, we want to make sure there's extra measures in place before we allow that. How is that wrong? So I'd be curious to read the minority opinion. Okay. I'd be curious to read the minority opinion. So with all that said, we get going here on a Tuesday morning. We're attempting to be inspirational. That'll start at the approximately 08. The gunner will be with us today, too. So, good morning to you on an Inspiration Tuesday. Charles Krauthammer and Staff Sergeant Jeremiah Workman, United States Marine Corps. Good morning to you. We'll be right back. dedicated to everybody out there who's dissatisfied with our government, that watches it in silence from afar, and is pained by the whole thing. So this dedicated for you. I'm not sure what to tell you. I don't know how it gets fixed. Normally, nations don't correct their course, and nations do not correct their course until something terrible happens, like they're defeated in a war or something else. And one can only hope that that doesn't happen to our country, but one watches our national theater that comes out of Washington, D.C., and is both disgusted and saddened by what they see, but I don't see any hope on the horizon. So this is for you. I'm not sure what else to tell you. I wish there was some sunshine I could pump up your ass, but that is the unvarnished truth. That when you look at it, you look at a system where catch and release is the law of the land. That's a bad system. You look at it at an electoral process that gives you Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump as a choice. That's a sick system. All right. So, on that cheery note, this is dedicated to you. Hope you have a nice day.
You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident that, thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech.
That got called candor in the headline. What a joke, right? What a joke.
But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so the young folks, you ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah. He goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain. It's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose. So you want to keep them in the cage.
Yeah. Oh man, that's awesome. Can you imagine? Were you a Vietnam veteran and you came home and they told you to take your uniform off and don't talk about it and just forget about it?
I can't even imagine. I have so much respect for those guys.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds, and win. You gotta win.
Winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. Okay? All right. What do I got to do? Oh, the weather. Marineland weather. Currently, clouds in 75 in Quantico. Clouds in 81, Camp Lejeune. Clouds in 86 in Granbury. A little bit cooler yesterday, not so much today. Montana, partly sunny in 67, almost 70 in Montana. That's hot. Sunny in 83 in 29 Palms at 742. Looking for a high today of 106. Got that going for you. Yeah, Musselman yesterday trying to sell. I don't think it's real humid here in Texas. Well, the humidity gauge says it's humid. Clouds at 65 at Pendleton, which means it's going to be warmer on the coast. Dark clear in 83 in Okinawa. And sunny and 100 degrees in the Helmand province of Afghanistan. Currently at the home of All Marine Radio, the beautiful Costa Mesa Newport Beach area of lovely Southern California. No matter how much the gunner badmouths it, it's where he grew up. Come on, man. He loves it out here. 64 degrees under cloudy skies. Little morning overcast. Looking for a high of 75 degrees. 76 tomorrow and 74 on Thursday. All right, we'll take a break. We'll check these headlines on our way to an inspirational Tuesday. Okay, so don't touch your dial. In the midst of all that gloom and doom I laid out for you, there's reason for hope. Okay? Mostly because we got no other course of action, okay? More of All Marine Radio coming up next. I just looked at a couple headlines, honestly, that it's just, it makes you shake your head.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Matt.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. So wanting my cake and eat it too. And wanting it both ways, fame made me a balloon. Cause my ego inflated when I blew sleep. It was confusing, cause all I wanted to do was be the Bruce Lee, a blue sleeve, a fused ink. Use it as a tool when I blew steam.
Anchors reading Supreme Court decisions. I'll tell you what's going on. 5-4. The travel ban is upheld by the United States Supreme Court. All that craziness, right? All that craziness, the highest court in the land said he was within his rights to do that. You know what, and I guess you think about it. watch some of the craziness that you see on your television late today because of this, okay? So there's a little piece of audio running around that not audio. It's an interview with Jay Johnson. All right. He was the former Department of Homeland Security guy. So he was on, and he was talking about the Obama era, I don't want to call it catch and release, what am I going to call it? He was on Fox News. I don't know what's going on in my backyard, but I got a dog fight. So everybody, hold on, I got to take a break. Sounds like I got a coyote in the backyard. So, let me go find out about that shit show. Back in a flash.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when the grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it.
So I just created this dope
for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, I'm back. All right. Okay, all right, I don't need the music. Okay, I wanted to play this because this is on, his name is Jay Johnson. All right, so he's talking about lessons with Chris Wallace on Sunday, lessons from the 2014 immigration crisis. All right. And so I want you to listen to it because he says something pretty interesting at the end about because he says this, we can't have catch and release. Okay. So now this is an Obama administration guy and very respected in the business of Department of Homeland Security. So I don't know his background. I probably should know it, but I don't. So
Democrats say President Trump created the mess over separating families at the border with his new zero-tolerance policy and that he alone can fix it. But what is their answer for stemming the tide of illegal immigrants coming into the U.S.? Joining us now, Jay Johnson, President Obama's Secretary of Homeland Security, who had to deal with a spike in illegal crossings back in 2014. Mr. Secretary, President Trump says the real cause of our immigration problems are weak laws and what he calls open border Democrats. Take a look.
They just want everyone to be released into our country, no matter how dangerous they are. They can be killers. They can be thieves. They can be horrible people. The Democrats say it's okay for them to be in our country.
Mr. Secretary, does the president have a point?
Chris, first of all, thanks for having me on. Chris, I'm not going to go down the road of the normal Washington blame game, Trump versus Obama, Obama versus Bush, or what have you. We have an underlying humanitarian crisis on our southern border that we must deal with and in Central America. The high in illegal migration was 18 years ago. It is now a fraction of what it used to be, but the demographic has changed. It's women and children coming from Central America. As you point out, we saw a spike in 2014. We did a number of things to deal with it. We had the second lowest number in apprehensions on our southern border in 2015 since 1972. But then the numbers started to creep up again. And so this is a problem that is international in scope. I applaud Mike McCaul for his leadership on the bill he discussed with you. But we've got to address this problem at the root cause in Central America, the poverty and violence in Central America that motivates women and children to come here in the first place. And we started on that in the Congress 2 years ago, and I hope Congress continues on that road.
Well, and we'll get to that a little bit later, but obviously you're not going to solve the problems quickly, which are pretty systemic in Guatemala and Honduras and El Salvador.
Without a doubt.
I want to talk to you about some specific things. I'm not playing the political blame game. I'm talking about issues. And one of them, the president says, and the Trump administration, that part of the problem is a measure that was written by Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein in 2008 that became law. If a minor, an unaccompanied minor or child comes across the border from Mexico or Canada, we can send them immediately back to their country. But under the Feinstein Amendment, if it's a non-contiguous country like Central America, right, not right on our border, they can't be sent back immediately. Hasn't that contributed especially to the spike in unaccompanied minors coming into this country over the last few years?
Chris, what you're referring to is the TVPRA passed in 2008.
Police officer gets out and looks at me and says, "Sir, do you have a gun in your car?"
The all right.
And as you point out, it does say that an unaccompanied child from Central America, a non-contiguous country, cannot be sent back immediately. Now, there's a certain amount of common sense behind that because you can't just simply send an unaccompanied child back across the southern border into Mexico. You cannot repatriate a Guatemalan to Mexico. And so that law, which has a certain level of protections for children, we're talking about unaccompanied children, 5- and 6-year-old kids, requires that the Department of Homeland Security place that child with HHS within 48 hours. A deportation proceeding is commenced, and the child has a right through a lawyer to assert a claim for asylum.
Secretary Johnson, the fact is, you know, we talk all about the children who are separated from their families. Of the 12,000 children that are in the system, 2,000 are children separated from families. 10,000 are unaccompanied minors. The perhaps unintended consequence of this amendment is that unaccompanied minors have flooded the area, a lot of them brought by coyotes, smugglers, into the country.
Well, Chris, even if that law did not exist, it would not be simply a matter of expediting the removal of an unaccompanied child. There are certain due process rights that they have anyway. And when we repatriate somebody, and the Trump administration knows this, when you repatriate somebody to Central America, Central America has to agree to take them back. You have to put them on planes. It's a very measured process. And so the TVPRA in 2008 was put in place to make certain that we treat unaccompanied children, we're talking about unaccompanied children, in a fair way.
I understand that. Let's look, because you mentioned it, at how the Obama administration and you as Secretary of Homeland Security handled this back in 2014, when there was also a spike in children, most of them unaccompanied, coming across the border. You started jailing entire families. In some cases, not a lot, but in some, you separated children from their parents. And these pictures that we're putting up from 2014 show pictures of unaccompanied minors in effect, jail situations. As you look back on that, did you handle it so well?
Well, Chris, without a doubt, the images and the reality from 2014, just like 2018, are not pretty. And so we expanded family detention. We had then 34,000 beds for family detention, only 95 of 34,000 equipped to deal with families. So we expanded it. I freely admit it was controversial. We believed it was necessary at the time. I still believe it is necessary to maintain a certain capability for families. We can't have catch and release.
Okay, that's the that's the point that that to me is significant, right? Here you have the Obama administration guy talking about what he did, and he says you can't have catch and release. That cannot be, but that's all that's left. So even a guy from the Obama administration who wrestled with this, and he's obviously an articulate guy. I first saw him in an interview with Jay Johns with General Kelly. And actually, it's Kelly being, I don't know if it's that video. Kelly appeared at, like, this thing called the Aspen Security Forum. And he was up on stage being interviewed, I think by Pete Williams. And he was talking about some new technology that was being used at airports. And so it was called, like, Triple T or something like that. And so Pete Williams said, well, or somebody in the audience said, well, what is Triple T? And Kelly started to describe it. He goes, I'm not exactly sure. And then they looked on, and then they went on, and then they said, oh, so-and-so's sitting there. He'll probably know what it is. And so he's a veteran of DHS. I want to say it was Jay Johnson, but I'm not sure. And they answered the question, and they said, well, it's this, 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 and this. And then Kelly was sitting up on the stage, and he looked at him and he says, geek. Pretty funny. Pretty funny. Exactly like he would have said it if he was in fourth grade and the same thing happened. So that's the first time I think that I heard Jay Johnson's name mentioned. Kelly said it with nothing but respect in his voice. You can see the issues that are, you know, that they deal with, right? How does a 5 or 6 year old unaccompanied minor, you know, understand due process and have any rights in the American legal system? I don't get that. And the next question is, what is a 5 or 6 year old child doing being smuggled in the United States without his parents or her parents? Well, let me tell you how that happens. One of my Marines was one of those kids. His mom was living in Honduras, and she had him. And then she made her way into the United States illegally. And then after she was here and had made a decent life for herself, I want to say he was 9 or 10, she had him smuggled into the United States. And he was telling us the story, and he was telling it after he said that, right? He said, he's a Hispanic guy. We're in Fallujah, and one night we're talking, you know, I don't know how many guys work, I run the CIC, the COC, CIC's on the ship. So 5th Marines Regimental COC in Fallujah. So we're working at night, right? And so I don't know what they're talking about, but all of a sudden you hear him say, "That's why I hate Mexicans." And like everybody's head like snaps, like, "What just got said? What just got said? Who hates Mexicans?" And his last name is, God, it was Omar Ortiz. I think it might have been Ortiz. So, like, so now everybody else, all the white guys and the black guys, right, they all look at him, and he says, "Yeah, dumbasses, we're not all Mexicans." Well, with that, everybody starts laughing. And my staff sergeant then says, "Why you hate Mexicans? I'm Mexican." And so he tells a story of being smuggled through Mexico and getting stopped by the Mexican federal police, the federales, as they're known, and them shaking them down, taking all their cash, and what he got left with was his backpack with some food in it, and he had no money. So they wound up, as they made their way through Mexico, they wound up having to steal food as they went, stealing chickens and stealing fruit from fruit stands and running, things like that. And that's how they made their way through Mexico. And so that's what these unaccompanied minors are. Their parents, their family is in the country. They're normally living with extended family members in their home nation, and now they're being sent for and being smuggled by their family. So, but again, when you hear Jay Johnson say, "Catch and release cannot be the law of the land," hello?
You can try different things. We did not want to go so far as separate families, but unless we deal with the underlying causes that are motivating people to come here in the first place, we're going to continue to bang our heads against the wall on this issue.
All right, so let's look at the...
So what he's saying is that we've got to deal with the economic crisis, the political crisis in Honduras. You know what? That cannot be the approach. It can't be on the United States that the only solution to this, and again, he's right, the long-term solution is greater economic stability in what, all of Latin America? That's the responsibility of the United States? Well, I get that we're part of it, but goddamn, Nicaragua's a shit show, right? Venezuela's a shit show. So now we're responsible for them, and that's our fault? No. So the people on that are on the border have to, and let me tell you what putting up a wall does, right? It brings Mexico into the problem, because those people are going to wind up being in Mexico for a longer period of time. Mexico, in my opinion, they just stand there with their hands in their pockets, don't do a whole lot. They do a little bit, don't do that much. They don't care, right? They don't care. All right, so this goes on. It's a pretty interesting and articulate discussion. Chris Wallace does a pretty good job here.
Problem that President Trump is trying to address right now. Let's put it up on the screen. 40 to 50,000 people cross the border illegally each month. Last month, 9,500 family members crossed the border illegally, and up to 40,000 unaccompanied minors cross per year. When I was talking this week to a top member of the Trump administration, and I told him you were going to be on the show, he said, "I have one question for Secretary Johnson. What is the Democrat solution? How would they deal?" I mean, it's easy to say, "Well, we got to fix Central America," but come on, that isn't going to solve the 40,000, 50,000 coming each month, certainly not anytime soon. How would you deal with that flood of people coming over the border now?
Well, I'll tell you, Jay.
I could have done this interview. What the hell?
Jay Johnson's solution. Continue our border security efforts. Give the Border Patrol, give immigration enforcement the tools they need, but let's not go so far as to separate families, but also continue what Congress started 2 years ago, aid to Central America to deal with the poverty and violence, and also encourage other countries in the region, Mexico, Belize, Costa Rica, Panama, to develop their own systems for asylum, for refugee processing. It was someone from the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops who told me in 2014, you can't just simply padlock a burning building without providing people with an alternative path to safety. And so we need to develop those additional paths for getting out of that.
Respectfully, that isn't going to solve the problem anytime soon. It won't solve it for months. It probably wouldn't solve it for years if we put $750 million, which is what we did during the Obama administration, into foreign aid in those three.
Yeah, that answer was a cop out.
Three countries. They're pretty broken countries. You've got a real crisis on the border with 50,000 people a month, 600,000 people a year coming across the border. How do you stop that? And what's wrong with zero tolerance? The idea you come across the border, you broke the law, we're going to prosecute you.
Three things. First, Chris, you're right. There are no easy fixes to this problem. And Washington is bad at investing in long-term solutions. Number two, history will tell you, lessons learned in 2014, you can do certain things that will drive down illegal migration in the short term, as we did in 2014. But then the longer-term patterns always revert to form. The numbers always creep back up. President Trump himself saw that in 2017. The numbers went down dramatically, and then they're back up again. And so you can do these things, but we've got to make the longer-term investments in dealing with illegal migration generally. And if we don't do that, we're going to continue to have this problem.
One final question, because the practical result of the program.
His answer to me is ridiculous because, so what is it? So the world that we live in, right? We're now in a trade war with China because we think that them running a $350 billion surplus, right? And us not having the same access to China's markets as they have to American markets, we think that's wrong. And China's pissed. Okay? What? Okay? So we want to rewrite that. Okay? Our short-term goal, because we're reasonable people, we'd like to cut it in half. Okay? We'd like to cut it to about $150 billion. Okay? So we'd like to dial it down a couple hundred billion dollars. Okay, we'd like to balance that. With Europe, we've been underwriting your defense. We've been underwriting your economy since World War II. We want that to change. We want it to be more equitable for the American worker. Is that not okay? Why is the American taxpayer, why are we still funding your defense? And why are we more interested in your defense? And why are we locked out of your markets and you have access to ours? Why? And now, what do we have to do? We have to create a welfare program for Honduras. So that come on, that's ridiculous. And I like Jay Johnson.
Program that the Obama administration put in was that you had to release. You caught and had to release some of the people with a promise and sometimes an ankle bracelet that they would come back. I want to put up some numbers on this.
Because I was trying to protect my family. I went back into the home, got my firearm.
These are the people that sponsor this little video clip. They cleaned it up and then they bombed their...
Because according to government numbers, 74...
They bombed their little promo in the middle of it. So, here you go. They photobomb it. They videobomb it.
...percent of those who were released showed up for their hearings last year. But that still left almost 40,000 people who didn't show up for deportation hearings. So catch and release, which is what the practical effect was under the Obama administration, and until this year for the Trump administration, that doesn't really work either, does it?
Well, without a doubt, it's a problem, Chris, which is one of the reasons we expand.
That's called whistling past the graveyard. Without a doubt, it's a problem.
...ended family detention, which was controversial.
And was knocked down by the court. That's the reason we got this 20-day ruling. It was because of the Obama administration's policy.
Well, we expanded family detention, and then we ran into the issue of the Flores case, which you mentioned a moment ago. I disagreed then with the ruling in the Flores case because I think that our Border Patrol and our immigration enforcement people need those tools available to deal with situations like this. But it's a sheer matter of numbers, Chris. Right now, we have family detention capability for about 3,000 or 4,000 people, and you've got over 1,000 migrants crossing the border a day in Central America. And so even if you emptied it out completely today, it would fill back up in a matter of days.
Right.
So there you are. This is not an easy problem, which is why we need to invest and address the underlying causes.
Secretary Johnson, thank you.
Cop out. The key part of the interview is Jay Johnson saying, and you know, and he's right about the long term. But what are we talking? 30-year long term investment in those countries? And look, those countries have been shit shows forever. They've been shit shows forever. So we can invest for 30 years, you know, will the money get to its intended locations, to the intended audience? Probably not, because that shit's been going on there down there for decades. Yeah, truth be told, getting close to a century of it. So, I mean, again, I like Jay Johnson, but when that's your solution to our border issue, then go away. I got no time for that. But the reason I played the audio was catch and release cannot stand. It cannot be the way we do it. And so, and what do you see in Washington, D.C.? Big fat nothing. Big fat nothing. All right, let me do some news headlines. Email, who's barking in the background? That is Joe, all right? Joe thinks that because he made it through his first year, now that means he'll probably make it through his second. He would be mistaken. And the stupid part is, it's just the dog next door who's out all the time. Losing his mind like he's a, there's a coyote in the backyard. That's why I went. No coyote. It's a dumbass dog next door. Headline, second woman graduates from infantry officer course. Congratulations to her. You know what the headlines of the story was last week? You know, it was next amphibious, you know, what was it? Next reconnaissance platoon commander, a woman. And you read that and you're like, oh, what? It was like, it was stupid. Again, it's this Marine Corps Times deal, headline writer deal. Okay? Stick to the truth. Your audience doesn't appreciate the nonsense. So anyway, congratulations to her. Let me just tell you this. The first woman that graduated, in my opinion, she has done nothing but, she, damn it, Joe, control yourself. Matt, get control of those mutts. You know what? I beat Joe's ass. He's impervious, man. He's impervious. And he is a criminal element in the house. I came home the other day, like, and I opened the sliding door, and after they've been out for a few hours, they come hauling ass in the house. Joe doesn't come hauling ass in the house, okay? So either one of two things. Either he's dead, or he's committed some type of criminal transgression that's so egregious that he won't even come in the house and look at me. Because whenever he sees me after he's done criminal activity, his head's down, his tail's down. Yeah. How'd you know he was guilty? He ran. That's Joe. Joe's a personification of that. And so he doesn't come in, so I go looking for him. He's now taken to hiding behind this row of, like, kind of bush, kind of tree thing. And it's trimmed pretty tight. So it's like a buffalo hiding behind Charlie Brown's Christmas tree. It doesn't work so much. So now I see him hiding, and I'm like, okay, what did he do? But I haven't found what he did yet. Yeah, normally it's chewing something, but I didn't see anything chewed. So, yeah, that's Joe. Joe is, he's my... He's a little bit over-motivated, okay? He's a little bit over-motivated in his world. Okay, so congratulations to her. I think the first female graduate of IOC did it exactly the way that she should have done it to increase her standing in the tribe. And that is, she didn't go all over TV talking about herself, because it's not something Marine officers do, okay? And she's savvy enough to know that there's all kinds of people that are rooting against her. But when she declined all, like, she can write her book at a later date, but when when she declined all those interview requests and all that and just went to work, there's a whole lot of people that said, look, I don't know who she is, but good on her. Good on her. I'll also tell you another story. Fight between a female Lance Corporal, 0311, and a male Lance Corporal over a broom. Staff Sergeant sends a female back up after he saw something that was supposed to have been cleaned up by the male Lance Corporal, and he didn't clean it up right, and he sends her up to go, hey, go unscrew that. She comes back, he won't give me the broom. Take it from him. Goes back up, they get into a fist fight. Okay? And so she winds up going to the hospital. And so she's advised you might want to get the police involved, blah, 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 blah. So at the end of it, she looks at the person in charge and said, why is two Lance Corporals getting in a fight such a big deal? Now, that's exactly what you would want to hear, right? Okay, doesn't make it right, but if you're going to live in this tribe, right, once we get to this line and we cross it, there is no gender. But I would tell you that impressed a whole lot of people. Really? Because I would have thought that you would have filed charges. No. I'm not a girl. I'm a Marine. Okay, so what do you think? So how do you think the tribe behaves when they hear that? They embrace her, right? She's a baller. And what do they do with him? You're a turd, bro. She's a stud. You're a turd. So, again, there's a tribal element to all of this. And the first woman that graduated, I don't know her name. I know she's a Captain Pendleton. I know she's in 2nd Battalion, 4th Marines. And I have no idea who this is. And wish her nothing but the best. Because it's not an easy road that they head down, and it takes no small amount of courage to take that on in a very public way and possibly fail, and fail in a very visible way. So congratulations to them, and I hope they do nothing but great things. All right, I hope they do nothing but great things. All right, interesting stuff. Gender integration in the Marine Corps. Can Congress finish its VA budget plan before the October deadline? Karnak says no. Won't even be close. All right, the only other story I'll talk about is VA backs off suicide study that indicated thousands of unreported military deaths. Okay. Veteran Affairs officials are walking back on a new suicide study which appeared to show thousands of unreported military deaths in recent years, saying differences among classifications of service members led to confusion in the statistics. At issue is an update to last week's VA's annual National Suicide Data Report, something they've been doing, I want to say, since 2014. The report is a massive collaboration between the VA, defense researchers, and census analysts, which have found that roughly 20 veterans a day take their own lives. That figure has held steady from 2008 to 2015. But for the first time, this year's data breaks down those figures into veterans receiving VA health care, about 6 individuals a day, veterans not using the department's health services, 11 a day, and a group including active duty troops, guardsmen, and reservists, 4 a day. All right? So that gets you to 20.6. So it breaks down. The moral of the story, according to the VA, is if you're under our care, you're less likely to commit suicide. All right. So 6 a day under VA care, 11 veterans a day not under VA care, for a total of 16 point something. I want to say 16.8. So that would be veterans. Active duty, guard, reservists, 4 a day. Pretty sobering suicide statistic among veterans, yes? Yeah, in a year, we'll go past on the fly, right? All of our combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. In 8 years, we'll do Vietnam. And in another 8 years, we'll redo Vietnam. That's all veteran suicide. Pretty sobering numbers. That calculation would put the Defense Department suicide total among troops at close to 1,400 for 2015, which was about 900 higher than what military officials had previously reported. Oops. Over a four-year span, the difference between the official defense figure and newly released VA estimates tops more than 3,400 deaths. This difference in the report may have caused some confusion and led to misperception that approximately 1,000 more current service members died by suicide than DOD reported in 2015. In our report, VA did not differentiate between deaths between active duty, current. So again, they're in the process of footnoting their suicide investigation, their suicide data. So film at 11. All right, top five on the early bird. One, poking the bear, U.S. Air Force builds its Russian backyard. Whoa. Poking the bear. Yeah, Russia running around the world being jackasses. And you know what this forces them to do? It forces the Russians to spend money. Money they don't got. Because their economy is the size of, fill in the blank, Canada. What? That ain't right. The Trump administration wants to spend $828 million in 2019 to build up military infrastructure in Europe as part of an ongoing initiative to deter Russian aggression and reinforce allies. So we're going to spend almost $1 billion, and Germany won't spend 2% of their gross domestic product. I got it. That makes sense to me. I could see why the Germans would be pissed at us. So there you have it. It's unbelievable. Honestly. Two, Navy's troubled Ford carrier makes modest progress. Yeah, the Gerald Ford is having a tough time. General Atomics says it's new launching, that it is launching new heavier planes from its EMALS carrier launcher. This is the new electronic system that launches aircraft. The launches are taking place on land and won't be attempted on board the $13 billion Ford for some time, however. One of the many issues plaguing the ship, causing years of schedule slippages and cost overruns, has been the reliability of the electromagnetic catapults and arresting gear, EMALS, which a Pentagon report said earlier this year has proven unreliable under all but the best conditions. You know what? I mean, how can that happen? How can you adopt a system for one of your state-of-the-art aircraft carriers and then just have it be non-functional? But despite slow going and scathing criticism from some in Congress, there appears to be positive progress, according to the maker of the catapults and the arresting gear. General Atomics Electromagnetic Systems announced today that its advanced arresting gear system caught its first C-2A Greyhound. The C-2 takes mail on and off. It's a turboprop, not a real jet, at a test site in Lakehurst, New Jersey. The next day, the AAG nabbed an E-2D Hawkeye. That's the AWACS version. Followed by an E-2C Hawkeye on June 8th. When are we going to get a jet there, boys and girls? When are we going to get something that can break it? Not something soft and gentle. Something that could break the apparatus. Joke. Mattis declares vigilance is the best cyber defense. That's asking too much, I think. Madison, Beijing, I think pretty, I don't know if he's there right now, but he's headed there this week. Squall would be rain. Scrawled would be something written. Scrawled in ink on the bottom of a memo, Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis's warning could not be clearer. Quote, be alert, exclamation mark, unquote. In the lineage of warnings, like loose lips sink ships, Mattis warned Department of Defense employees in a memo to remain vigilant in a world where secrets can fall into the hands of digital intruders coming after a series of high-profile data breaches that have embarrassed America's top defense officials. For the estimated 2 million Defense Department employees, the Secretary's warning served as more of a pep talk than a crash course in digital security. There can be no complacency, the memo warned. Vigilance is our best defense against losing sensitive data. Chinese hackers stole a massive amount of highly sensitive data related to undersea warfare from a naval contractor, the Washington Post reported on June 8th. The episode is one of the most publicized raids on America's digital secrets in the hands of a foreign government in recent memory. Navy briefed it. Quote, it was shocking how disorganized, unprepared, and quite frankly, utterly clueless the branch of the military was that has been breached, according to Representative Adam Smith, who's a Democrat from the state of Washington. Even in this day and age, we still have not figured out how to put together a cyber policy to protect our assets. I suggested it. If you have a kid that likes computers, steer them into cybersecurity. They'll support your whole family at some point. Number four, will the TRICARE dental replacement be fulfilling for veterans? How funny. That's a funny headline, right? Five, soldiers to shoot more, stay longer in infantry schools. Whoa. Army getting serious about their infantry. That's interesting. Stars and Stripes story. The Army will add two more months to infantry school, making the biggest change to the institution. I'm going to kill his ass. In nearly a half century, in a move the service says is designed to develop a more lethal force. It's interesting because the Marine Corps Gazette has done a series of articles about the requirement to spend more time in infantry schools. Yeah. Yep. Yep. And so in the Marine Corps, the articles say that up to a year would be spent in those schools. Yeah, up to a year. So the Army's adding an additional 2 months. Wow, that's impressive. Good on them. In July, the Army will extend its one station unit training from 14 to 22 weeks. So that's 8 weeks. In a pilot program so that new recruits will get more weapons and combat training, said Colonel Townley R. Hendrick, the commander of the Army School of Infantry. Between July and October 2019, the expanded course will be introduced throughout the infantry school. So, good on the Army. I like that. The decision to reform the Army's training of infantry soldiers came after Defense Secretary Jim Mattis emphasized the need for more combat-ready ground force. Soldiers will train more with their M4 rifle, the M240 machine gun, and the M249 squad automatic weapon, Hendrick said in a statement. So across all of the infantry weapons, they will get more bullets. And they will also shoot more at night rather than just doing a day familiarization fire. Whoa, I like it. Not going to lie to you. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. All right. Anything in... What's that? And hang in there, hang in there, hang in there. I'm just scanning something. All right. Headlines and Stars and Stripes today is the story we just talked about. Soldiers to shoot more, stay longer in infantry school. Number two is a story that is I read this story and it's pretty amazing. A soldier decorated who fought in World War II is going to be decorated evidently with the Medal of Honor. Headline: the Army hero fought off 600 German soldiers virtually alone. Now he's getting the Medal of Honor. Okay, his name is Garland Merle Connor. He was born in Albany, Kentucky. Fought in World War II, fought in the Battle of Anzio. His wife is still alive. How about that? Story is, I remember when I first saw this, when this first got in the news, I checked out the story and, you know, it's jaw-dropping. Let me just read you his, let's see, do they have his decorations here, his awards? The Distinguished Service Cross. He has a Silver Star times 3. He has a Bronze Star. He has 3 Purple Hearts. So the story goes, on October 23rd, Connor and his division departed the United States from Norfolk, Virginia, to fight in Europe. Went to North Africa, participated in 4 amphibious assaults, landings, and 8 campaigns during the Anzio campaign in Italy, during which he earned the Silver Star. He was promoted to technical sergeant. He was discharged and then commissioned a second lieutenant on 28 June. On 29 December 1944, he was promoted to first lieutenant. He was awarded 4 Silver Stars for gallantry in action. He was also awarded the Bronze Star, 3 Purple Hearts. He was presented the Distinguished Service Cross from the commanding officer of the 7th Army. And that is what is being upgraded. That is what is being upgraded to the Medal of Honor. Remember, crosses, one down. All right, here's a citation. For extraordinary heroism in action on 24 January 1945 at 0800 hours near Hussein, France, Lieutenant Connor ran 400 yards through an impact area of an intense concentration of enemy artillery fire to direct friendly artillery on a force of 6 Mark VI tanks and tank destroyers, followed by 600 fanatical German infantrymen, which was assaulting in full fury the spearhead position held by the battalion. Unreeling a spool of telephone wire, Lieutenant Connor disregarded shells, which exploded 25 yards from him, tearing branches from trees in his path, and plunged into a shallow ditch 30 yards beyond the position of his foremost company. Although the ditch provided inadequate protection from heavy automatic fire from the advancing enemy infantry, he calmly directed round after round of artillery on the foe from his prone position, hurling them back to the shelter of a dike. For 3 hours he remained in his OP, despite wave after wave of German infantry, which surged forward to within 5 yards of his position. As the last all-out German assault swept forward, he ordered his artillery concentration on his own position, resolved to die if necessary to halt the enemy. Friendly shells exploded within 5 yards of him, blanketing his position, wounding his one assistant. Yet Lieutenant Connor continued to direct artillery fire on the assault element swarming around him until the German attack was shattered and broken. Holy shit. By his exemplary heroism, he killed approximately 50 and wounded an estimated 100 Germans, disintegrated the powerful enemy assault, and prevented heavy casualties in his battalion. Korean War veteran Richard Cliffland, whose uncle PFC Gordon Roberts served with Connor in combat and was killed in action in Anzio on 31 January 1944, stated in 2015, "My God, he held off 600 Germans and 6 tanks coming right at him. When they got too close, his commander told him to vacate the position, and instead he replied, 'Blanket my position.' The request meant Connor was calling for artillery strikes as he was being overrun, risking his life, in order to draw friendly fire that would take down the enemy too, during which time he directed his men for 3 hours by phone. He will be awarded an upgrade to his Distinguished Service Cross, which is the Medal of Honor. There's a story, actually a press release, that has a picture of his wife holding a picture of him. It looks like a motivated first lieutenant, right? Enlisted out of Kentucky. Looks good in his army uniform too. Got his tie a little poofed out. And what do they call that uniform? Pink and greens that the army used to wear when they had good uniforms. You know, they're trying to bring that back. This was issued yesterday. The widow of a World War II soldier will accept the Medal of Honor for her husband at the White House, I believe today. It says tomorrow, and it was issued yesterday, so that means today. 22 years after his family began to the campaign to upgrade his Distinguished Service Cross. Army First Lieutenant Garland M. Connor, his widow Pauline Connor, was joined today in a Pentagon press briefing by Army Major General Leopoldo Quintas, the commanding general of the 3rd Infantry Division. Eric Villard, historian, Center for Military History, and Luther Connor, a cousin of Garland Connor, an attorney who was involved in fighting for the Soldiers' Medal of Honor recognition. Pauline, 89 years old, of Albany, Kentucky, will accept the honor on behalf of her husband, who died 20 years ago at the age of 79. Pretty cool. God bless him. That's a great story. It's a great story. So, that in the news. I want to check U.S. Naval Institute, because I like their news. They tend to be pretty dispassionate. Congress got a report on the Purple Heart. From the report, Purple Heart is one of the oldest, most recognized military medals awarded to service members who were killed or wounded in action. The conflicts of this past decade have greatly increased the number of Purple Hearts awarded to service members, primarily because you can, if you're knocked out, that's considered being wounded, right? Before, in any other conflict, you could, like Lieutenant Connor, he could have been knocked silly by all that artillery. He did not raid another Purple Heart. Now you do, if you're knocked out by an IED, right? Which is a recognition of traumatic brain injury, all right? So, anyway, so it's a report on the Purple Heart and the impact of recognizing that. And let me tell you, that was Mike and I discussed it. Mike and I both talked, you know, when that debate was going around in 2004, he and I were of the same opinion. You don't get it for getting knocked out. You get it for getting your body damaged, for getting a hole knocked in yourself, right? We're not going to cheapen the award. that was changed. And again, it is recognition that you know, your brain getting scrambled is an injury to your body. All right. Here's another interesting headline. Failure to provide UK Royal Naval escorts for new carriers is potentially dangerous, warn lawmakers. What? The United Kingdom's new Queen Elizabeth-class aircraft carriers should be able to conduct warfighting missions without support from Allied forces, an influential paramilitary committee insisted last week. What? The regeneration of fading anti-submarine warfare capabilities, the retention of amphibious shipping, and the acquisition of a surface ship-launch land attack missile must also be top priorities for a cash-strapped Royal Navy, according to the House of Commons. And they're talking about that this carrier is not going to have escorts. Who provides them? Oh, I think I know who. Okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you're going to hear a little bit of inspiration. You're going to hear a little bit from Charles. Maybe we won't do Charles Krauthammer today. I want you to hear Jeremiah Workman's, a little extract from him. I've got 18 minutes till Mr. Fabulous comes on. So let me take a break. You'll hear Jeremiah Workman. I'll tee up the Charles Krauthammer thing. Krauthammer's in, like I said, I'm gonna go buy his book today. He is, should be a source of inspiration for a lot of people. The way he lived his life, the articulate way that he conducted himself, relative to political discussions, something that a lot of people that have taken an oath in our country ought to learn. Again, to include the President of the United States. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.